and welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't pitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
And welcome to another brand new edition of The Municipals. I'm Matthew.
I'm Philip. Matthew, listen to you. Oh. You sound a little on the beaten path.
I got a sore neck. I swear to God, I was in the grocery store. Sorry,
It's coming in too quick.
I'm drinking my THC, so we'll see what happens today. It'll be interesting. I was in the grocery store earlier today, grocery shopping. You ever notice, no offense to mothers or wives or sisters or anything, but when you're the man, or in this case, I'm the former guy, the kid's father, whatever the fuck. Anyway.
I'm excited for this. I don't even know what this is, but I'm excited for this.
You ever notice, if you go to the grocery store, I'll speak for myself. If I go to the grocery store, I'm in and out in, God, I don't even know if I'm in there 20 fucking minutes. But, and this is no disrespect to, I love women. I love women. But women shop for literally hours, and I don't get it. You know what you need. Most women make a shopping list, right? They write it down before they leave, right? But when they get to the store, it's like, oh, I got to go down this aisle. But there's nothing on your list that's down that aisle, but you still got to go down the aisle. You see what I'm saying?
No, listen, I'm laughing. I'll tell you, my experience is completely different, but I'll explain why. But I love the preamble to this being women, am I right, fellas? About grocery shopping. It's very funny for me. Now, for me personally, I go into a grocery store, and Matthew, I'll have a grocery list, and I will take at least an hour. And I'll tell you, it's 100% anxiety based because, you know, there'll be specific brands I need to get, and I'll forget which one's the right one, but I'll have an approximation. Anyways, grocery shopping is a very anxiety inducing activity for me. So it does take, nothing to do with anything you're talking about. I just thought that was a fun thing to throw your way.
So I kind of skipped over the part. So I'm in there, right? Because it's taking so long. I woke up with a sore neck because of my pillow situation. And so with every step I'm taking, it feels honestly like my neck is going to break. I'm wilted to one side. I'm pretty sure that anyone that saw me today in that Costco thought either I was mentally deficient or I was high on some fucking awesome drugs.
Hey, one or the other. It's not a bad assumption to have, I'll tell you that much.
Anyway, a lot has happened since we recorded last. And we're going to get to, I guess most of it. But I wanted to start with, because I don't know that we did justice to the February 14th budget council meeting. And I wanted to put a button and say all the things that maybe we didn't get a chance to say because we ran out of time last time we recorded. So that's where I'm going to hand the ball to you.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. What happened February 14th?
The budget council, it was passed. We said it was passed.
Yeah. No, I know.
Specifics. I'll start. I noticed one thing that was not talked about, was not highlighted, was not one counselor, the mayor, or city staff said one word about whether or not there is any money set aside for the renaming of Dundas Street. And I'm going to keep harping on that until we get a yes or a no for 2024. And then when 2025 comes, I'm going to ask it again and again, because they paused it, Philip. They didn't say we're never going to do it. They paused it. So like a video game, you unpause it. Oh, and by the way, I said I had an update. I'm just going to break in real quick. I got everything I need now to play Mario 64 on my 64. You'll never guess how much it cost me. So I had to get the hookup from the system to the TV, which, because it's a smart TV, it's whatever. It's anyway. And then I had the power cord plus the controller plus the video game. I spent $140 fucking.
Matthew. 1 second.
I know. I could have gotten the game for the Switch and it would have cost the same amount of money.
Would it?
Something like that. Yeah. 140, 130, 120.
No, I've already seen one. Oh, you know what? That's from Japan. You know what?
I'm not waiting for Japan. Say,
I was like, it's $80. That's not bad. And then it was like from Japan. I'm like, by the way, like in the middle of your talking, I went right to Google. It was like Super Mario All-Stars. And
I'm already ashamed of myself. I'm already 10 stars in, died 3 times.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. We all, you know, we love what we love. And we got to enjoy what we got to enjoy. As a quick jump in here, I've finally used my political social media capital for something good today. I asked out loud if there was a place in Toronto to get video game consoles repaired. And friend of the show, Beth Levy, gave me a place to go. So I'm very excited. It's not for my Switch. It's for my kids' Switches because they're terrible.
What's wrong with it?
Well, my son's Switch is like the rails are very wobbly. In fact, I don't think the Joy-Con controllers are latching on properly. And then my daughter's Switch, which was my Switch, so it's like a day one launch Switch. So, in fact, today is the Switch's 7th birthday. So I'm like, this makes sense for, you know, the state the Switch is in. But I think it just needs like a fan repair, and I think it'll be good to go.
Sounds good.
That's, you know, that's my hope. And finally,
actually,
politics
so,
is getting me something.
While we're still on technology, before we go back to February 14th meeting, I realize that we need some. I'll speak for myself. I need something that I'm not sure exists yet in this world: a wireless iPad charger.
You know what? I'm sure.
If one does not exist, please create it and give us the trademark idea.
If not, I'm sure there has to be something. If not already exists, something that plugs into like the bottom of the iPad.
But that's the problem, because my son's iPad, you can plug in the charger, it won't charge.
Oh shit. Okay. All right. Someone solved Matt's problem. Beth already solved my problem, so we're halfway to having all of our problems solved.
There we go. Now, February 14th, is there anything that we left out that wasn't said?
I mean, I was just, I'm sure I said it last.
Did you get an answer to your email?
No. God.
What the fuck?
You know, here's what's really disappointing to me about not getting a response, particularly from Parthi, okay? When I went to the in-person budget consultation for Scarborough Southwest, and I talked to Parthi, again, as a person, as an individual person, and, you know, listen, I've already ragged about some of his votes on council. As a human being, I really, really like Parthi. You know, I just think he's a good guy. And, like, so I talked to him about sending the first email. I say first email, and I'm like, what was the context of that email? It was another police budget-based email. And he kind of gave me this question of like, oh, did you get a response to that? And I told him no. But I was telling him that I wasn't pushing him on it because it's like new counselor, new office. I don't know how long it takes anyone to like get their bearings, you know? But I never got a response to that first email. And I never got a response to that second email. God damn it, Parthi. Come on the show and explain yourself. No, I'm not actually demanding that. But no, I didn't get a response from Parthi. I didn't get a response from Olivia Chow. It's very disappointing. Matthew, I guess your questions are more reciprocal, because it sounds like when you send questions to counselors, you get a response more often than I do.
I maybe I just got lucky. I don't know. You know, maybe we'll do another round of questions. We'll send it to each counselor. As soon as I can find something.
They don't like my whimsical email writings where I'm like, hey, friend, where I just want to collaborate on a better city. And they see that and they're like, oh, this guy can shut the fuck up.
Maybe we can. Well, we're going to talk about the executive committee meeting in a couple minutes. But I left out one thing. And to be fair, like we said in the last show, and we've said all along, we like someone that's not going to stop us from calling them out. You know, we might have more fun if it's someone that, you know, we don't particularly agree with, you know, like your Bradfords and your Holidays.
You're about to say your boys.
I will say, you know, for the speaking for the February 6th and 7th meetings, as much as I respect and I like each person I'm about to talk about, I was a little disappointed in Councillor Malik, Councillor Perks, and Councillor Matt Lowe. Because I felt like during those 2 days of meetings, which I extensively watched and took notes on, you can listen to our last show and hear all about it, they didn't really speak. Maybe four times between the three councillors. And I honestly, I don't think Matlow spoke at all. Now, we all know, or if you're paying attention on social media, he was considering running federally in next year's election. Under the Liberal banner. And now we know that he has decided to not do that. Any thoughts on that, Philip?
Love and respect for my man, Josh.
We love him.
Absolutely. And again, I've told you, it's like a complicated thought, right? Where I've told you I'm not crazy about these municipal electeds running for other offices while they're safe in their seats. Like they don't have to give it up or anything. Like there's no risk. And I feel like that's taking advantage. So I'm glad Josh isn't doing it. And his reasoning, of course, his daughter is young. And
I think his real chief of staff is Molly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's working for him. I'll tell you that much. But I do really respect that. I honestly think, again, I think there's this impression that the higher level of politics you go, it's like the more important the job is, the more. No, city councilors have more impact than MPPs and MPs. Like, Josh, stick to your beat. I just think he's good where he is. And I think it's a great position to have.
Absolutely. So if you don't have anything to add on February 14th, I think we can move on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about briefly, because I didn't watch it. I watched maybe half an hour of it, and I didn't want to listen to it anymore.
Well, now, is it a case of you were bored or you were mad? I feel like that's how the two ways government can really like lead you when you're trying to pay attention.
Honestly, I was bored.
fair enough.
Yeah, you know, executive committee meetings are... I mean, I look who's on the committee. No offense to anyone who's on the executive committee. It seems like... I'm just going to say it. I think Olivia Chow has surrounded herself with yes men and yes women. And no one who would push back. See, and if that offends anyone, I apologize. But that's the way I see it.
It's not offensive. I mean...
Well, I mean... with this Online Harm Act, which we'll get to, but you got to be careful. You know, you can't offend anyone. Anyway, go on.
I don't know. I'm going to talk something later about the image of Olivia Chow that I want to be talking against. The image I want to say that's brought up more by like Toronto Sun, National Post, this image of Olivia Chow. But the reality of Olivia Chow has also been, I want to say, disappointing. And how do I explain what I want to say about, it's not that everything she's done has been bad. I do think 100% she's an improvement over John Tory. She might be the best case scenario on the slate for our next municipal elections too.
Let's not get carried away.
All right. Well, listen, I'm saying what I'm saying.
I will agree with you that she's better than John Tory. I will give you that.
There's just some elements that I find so disappointing from her, including, of course, the capitulating to the police budget thing and just the way that she's handled even at the budget meeting, you know, and there were protesters there. I don't know. I don't think the city has done a very good job of interacting with, I want to say, opposition to what they want to do. You know what I mean?
No, they just ignore them like they don't exist. Same with the federal government, the provincial government. People can protest all the live long day, and it doesn't make a difference.
It just feels frustrating because it felt like Olivia Chow would be more receptive. Really, not. I mean, it almost sounded like I was going to say more receptive to mob rule. But even, I believe I talked about it on the last episode, the phone-in public consultation. So the will of the city, you know, the people who are participating, again, 10% of the people participating said increase the police budget. 43% said decrease the police budget. And you were already giving an increase to the police budget. And then, like, what's the point of participating if the answer is always going to be the status quo? And I feel like that's kind of like my issue with Olivia Chow, where I think a lot of people had an idea that she was going to be more transformational. And now, again, she hasn't been there. She hasn't even been there a year. Like, I have to, of course, I have to be aware of that reality, too. And, you know, this is her first pre-John Tory budget. Or sorry, post-John Tory budget. She went back in time and made a worse budget. Her first post-John Tory budget. There's time. Like, I'm just looking into my crystal ball at December 2024, and we're getting another campaign from the Toronto Police Union talking about their increased response times and how it's our fault for not giving them enough money and they need even more money. Like, it's just, you know, I should take this clip of this podcast and just hold on to it until December because I know I'll be right. It's like, just, it feels like we haven't escaped the previous administration. And I'm sure a lot of that is, you know, kind of the behind the scenes city staff. But I kind of agree with you that it feels like there's nobody pushing back on Olivia Chow, especially when it sounded like her staff was going to be like the Progress Toronto folks, you know what I mean? And you sort of get the impression that they would push back.
I would just love to know who should we be mad at? Who's the one who's full of shit? And you know what? I'll piggyback off what you said. What her actions are is not matching what she's saying, what she said on the campaign trail, what she harped on. She loved to point out they all did. They all pointed out John Tory's mistakes. But you already, I mean, we covered this already. The three strikes and you're out. She said she wasn't going to use her strong mayor powers, and she's done it. She said there would be no encampment clearings, and there's at least one that we're aware of. And number three, she said she was going to fight for Ontario Place. And I said in the episode, and I still stand by it today, even though I think it was a great deal, doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't match what she said out of her own mouth. I'm going to help to fight to save Ontario Place.
I think it was the immediate capitulation that felt like getting kicked in the ass. Even if it were like, if it took a year to get to that point, I think it would be like, okay, you tried, you know, but instead it was like 3 months later. It's like, dope, sick. And again, you're right. There are great aspects of that deal. You know, the uploading of the gardener, you know, it's good. It's good for the city, but it's a shock. It's a kick in the ass. It's just like, Olivia, I thought you were going to fight for this.
Anyway, I guess the time has come to talk about that motherfucking FIFA deal. Surprise, surprise. The cost, which the city's on the hook for, cost has gone up. And I had a chart here somewhere. If I can find it, that would be great. It was detailing what we were going to get. Oh, I think I found it. Projected economic impacts of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Okay, so under, where is it here? Government taxes for Toronto, it is the municipal accommodation tax only. We're going to get $3 million. We're stuck with all the costs, which is, I think it...
What, $380
million? $380 million. MLSC is going to reap all the benefits and get all the profits. And we're going to get $3 million only because people that come here, well, they're going to have to get hotels and food and stuff. And that's tax money. And that's the only way we're going to get paid. And that's about, they're projecting $3 million.
It's...
I don't, when I, okay, listen, I know, I think this deal was put together in 2021, if I'm correct, right? And you and I can't, I'll speak for myself again. I was doing my other podcast and the election season had not begun yet. So this might have been one of the things that I was lost in the shuffle for me that I wasn't paying attention. So I don't actually know how he was able to vote on it. As a person who sits on the Rogers board, that and Rogers owns 37.5% of MLSC, I do not understand how he was able to put that deal together and vote on it. If in fact I believe he did vote on it. If I'm wrong, anyone is welcome to correct me.
Someone please correct us, because at this point we're both just about to admit that we're talking out of our asses, because I was under the impression that it was city staff who kind of made the deal, and I'm not sure council voted on it at all. Am I wrong? That's,
no, that would be something that would have to go in front of council.
It has to, right?
It has
to. I'm crazy. You know what? You're probably right. I think I'm crazy. I think I'm too tinfoil-y. I think it's too tight on my head. I think you're right.
It has to,
at the same time, why are governments so willing to, like, you know, we'll fight for good programs, you know, for lower income people, and it's like governments are just like, we gotta means test this. So if you make, you know, 70,000, yeah, you get the benefit. If you make $70,001, you're cut off, and it's a months long process. You know, like, government benefits are like a slow process. MLSC, multi-billion-dollar entity. We will give you everything. Can we get the scraps, please? Oh, 50% of the scraps? We'll take 50% of the scraps. No problem, sir. Like, why are they so quick to, like, you know, lick the boot? You know what I mean?
That would be a great name for this episode.
Lick the boot?
Lick the boot. I like it.
Fuck, man.
I honestly, I would love to get, if anyone can hear, within the sound of my voice, if you can hear me, send us the voting record for this particular FIFA. I would love to know who voted yes and who voted no.
And or if we've got city staff who know about the deal, please tell us about the deal, please.
Phil and I will look into it, and if we get what we need, we'll run with it next time you hear us on the air. Anyway, so let's move along. Anything else you want to cover municipally? Because that's really it for me. I mean, I'll go back to the executive meeting for one minute. They were talking about rideshare stuff. I guess they're looking to, did they put a cap on how many Ubers can be on the road? I think they're looking to either get rid of the cap or extend the cap. I don't know. I stopped listening because, again, executive meeting is boring. At least with council, you have all the colors of the political scale.
Yeah, the personalities, the holiday doing his magic tricks, the actually, so speaking of Stephen Holiday, and I'm glad you've kind of opened the floor to this. I really should have looked into it in more detail. But more incredibly, I was kind of angling myself to be like, I just have to send this text to Matthew. I just have to send him this text, and he won't have a problem with this. He'll probably say, yeah, go for it, just ask. But I just never sent the text because I'm diseased, you know, anxiety, just don't deal with it. I was just gonna text you and ask to invite former municipal, always municipal in our hearts, Jennifer Alexander, Etobicoke voice author.
She was there.
So what me and Matthew are referring to, I don't think I said it out loud, was that Stephen Holiday had a public consultation, which, hey, by the way, public consultations are good. For
look at you giving him his due.
Shut up. That's all I'll say. Just shut up. I gotta give what little credit I can give him. I guess I gotta give it to him. But so, you know, about cycling infrastructure in his ward. Now, if you know anything about Stephen Holiday, you know he's opposed. You just know he's opposed to it. He's opposed to anything. You know, if it came after the year 1957, he's opposed to it. Is my impression of the man. So
he is the leading no voter.
Yes. Now, it just feels like a particularly bad time for him to have had this consultation. I'm not blaming him for the stuff that's happening on the roads. But I'm just, before I get into this piece about this budget consultation, I want to say street. If I say street violence, you get a very different impression than what I want to give up. You probably think like gangs and guns and drugs, where I'm just thinking, people who are cycling. God, why can't I think of how I want to refer to this? That's, again, not street violence, because that sounds completely different from what I want to say. For example, a couple weeks ago, a man very close to Birch Brown and St. Clair died while cycling due to Scarborough's lack of cycling infrastructure. I mean, people will blame it on a million different things, but that's just the way I see it. And we had a lot of community members today partake in a memorial bike ride for him. I wasn't there. I really should have been. I know my friend Kevin Ripasinghe was there. Dave Shelnut, the biking lawyer.
What about former municipal Robert? I can't say his last name.
You know, he probably was there. in fact, I think I wanted to go to the Warden Hilltop to like see them. At the same time, I wasn't sure how weird it would be if I went without biking. And I didn't want to bike, ironically, because Scarborough, it's a scary place to bike because there's no cycling infrastructure. And also, I just think the drivers in Scarborough are
not even on Kingston Road.
I want to say when you get to Danforth, and that's not Scarborough, that's when you're entering like East York, but on Danforth, the cycling lane, when you just go straight down to Young, beautiful, great ride, love it. But the rest of Scarborough, and again, that's not Scarborough at all, you're really kind of devoid of the safe infrastructure. Again, I partook when I was running for city councilor, and I will continue to do so. I support, oh God, I love the cyclists. They're so good. I really do love the community. But what we still have a lot of people who are dying, you know, cycling. And especially in a time when we're talking about the importance of physical fitness, Cycling is good. You know, we want to redirect traffic from single occupancy vehicles or whatever to cycling. Sorry. It's good for health, good for the environment, blah, 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 blah. We should want to do this. And of course, there's a lot of resistance, including at Stephen Holliday's budget consultation, which sounds like it was a very messy affair of very, very anti-cycling infrastructure folks. And to be clear, I'm not saying they're wrong because they have a different opinion than me. Like Matthew, I don't know how strongly you are for or against cycle lanes. I'm not saying that being against cycle lanes makes you a bad person. But the kind of commentary
Can I interrupt you just because you asked me? So yes. I've actually thought about this question. And if I say, well, what do I need cycling lanes for? I drive. that means to people, oh, well, no, because he drives. He's against bike. No, I'm a realist. And much like people have accepted the reality that the most likely outcome is Pierre Poilievre as the next prime minister, which we'll get to later. I'm a realist that I know that bike lanes are here to stay. So I would go for I would say for the compromise because I'm a realist, but I don't know if it's caveat or the kickback or whatever the fuck I'm trying to say.
I think the caveat is probably the word you're looking
here's
for.
Here's the issue. So, because I want the compromise, because I'm not willing to get out of my car and get on a bike, I'm persecuted against. That's what I feel like. It used to be different. Now it's you're persecuted if you're not. You're either one or the other. You can't be both.
I think I get a lot of that. Understand what you're saying.
Maybe I'm like, saying it wrong.
No. I think I understand what you're saying, but when people talk about and I can't remember if you said it like a couple weeks back, I think you sort of, I don't know if it was you or I heard it from someone else and I'm now attributing it to you. So if you're like, I didn't say this, Philip, what are you saying? You can tell me that I'm crazy. But it was sort of dismissing the idea that we've prioritized cars for the last 100 years.
80 years. But yes, that was Diane Sachs that said that. We said that we covered that last week.
Right. And the problem is that I agree with her. I agree with that. The problem is I agree with that sentiment. But so it I know there's a lot of times where it does feel like the changing of the status quo feels like it's an attack. I don't know how I want to phrase this.
Yeah, you and I never really, we kind of brushed over that. You and I never really got into it last time we recorded.
I think I probably would have, I don't think we did because I probably would have said, I actually agree with Diane Sachs.
But here's the thing about that, right? The road is supposed to be for cars. Of course they're going to be prioritized. Where would you have the car go? On the sidewalk?
Well, I think it's the matter of, you know, you'll have people say, like, we're trying to encourage alternative means of travel, right?
Right.
That's it. So it's like, especially when we're doing things that I want to say, where we essentially, the thing that a lot of people would say is like the conspiracy that they're trying to do, but it's not a conspiracy because it is true. They want to discourage you from driving. Now, that's not them trying. I feel like where the conspiracy goes too far is when it's, they want to get rid of all cars forever. That's not happening in the near future. But like, obviously a lot of these policies are about discouraging driving. Like it's
feels like a waste of time to me.
it's I don't know. It's an environmental push more than anything else.
So going back to this meeting, I know you were telling us what happened.
It's more. So apparently there was city staff, or I'm not sure if it was city staff or staff from Amber Morley's office, who basically were presenting the benefits of cycle lanes. And you have an audience who's heckling, interrupting, just basically making it a nightmare to present. And my understanding is that Stephen Holliday did nothing to dissuade the crowd. And I feel like as a leader, regardless of if you believe in it or not, you should at least at the very minimum demand an audience that is respectful. And even beyond just having a respectful audience in that moment, there's more than one person making comments in the vein of, oh yeah, I would just like to run them over. And this stuff is so normalized. Like, it's, you see some people, maybe they see the footage and they're like, oh my God, what a horrendous thing to say. But this stuff is very common.
I'm just aware of our time. I got one quick question before we take our break. Do you think there is a group of people that feel like cycle lanes and cyclists are being rammed down their throats? Because I believe a group like that does exist.
A group that is making that point?
Or
a group that is doing it?
No, a group that is making that point.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure Rob Davis was canvassing with that group before.
Good point. Was that a zinger?
Kind of. No, actually, it wasn't. Listen, that's just a statement of fact. I'm thinking of the instance where it's like you had the guy get in the way of someone taking the bike lane and the bike kind of went into the road and Rob Davis was there. That's not me zinging Rob Davis. That's just me saying, that's what you're talking about.
And with that, we're going to see you guys on the other side. And we're back. And I didn't mean to cut you off before. Is there anything else that you wanted to add on that cyclist versus
cyclist versus the world
and whatever else happened at that consultation?
This is more just like a little thought I've had for myself. It's not about the consultation, but I guess more of my thought on doing good in the world. I think that sounds very grand when I say it like that, but I'm thinking of how, so Jennifer Alexander, you know, typical voice, I've suggested to her before that I think it would be great if she ran for city council in Ward 2. Because, you know, there's so few, like, even the last municipal election, I'm pretty sure, wasn't there only like three people running in that ward?
Yes.
And like, I liked Thomas. I liked him a lot. You could tell I was thinking of trying to say his last name. Nunziello?
I can't remember.
Tommy boy, reach out. We can be files still. But at the same time, even he wasn't local to that ward, which again, I'm not saying is the definitive worst thing ever, but I'm just thinking someone who's a community oriented person like Jennifer would make such a good counselor in that ward. Now, so I say that out loud, and it reminds me of my inspiration for like why I want to run for city council. But I also think of the fact that, you know, you can't only have running for politics and hope you get in to do things that affect change. You know what I mean? When I say that I think Jennifer should run for city council, you know, there's a certain image there of just, I feel like I have a thought where I'm trying to explain that there's so many people doing so many good things for the city of Toronto who aren't elected officials. You know, you don't have to be an elected person to have good things going in the city. I think I'm just I'm having a little bit of a crisis, Matthew, in my identity, in terms of just thinking of things that you can do to be good in the city without necessarily being an elected official.
Absolutely. As I've said plenty of times before, you know, I wish there was more that I can do. That's what I've been harping on, you know, helping. And this is no disrespect to any of the refugees, but the Canadian or been in Toronto for life or for people that have been homeless, not just this year, but for the last 10 or even 12 years or however long, where's the help for those people? And again, not taking anything from the refugees. We all need help. They need help as well. And they definitely should get the help. But
you know, even on that front, sorry, while I was having this thought of, you know, doing good things outside of politics, I had like a list of names internally in my head that I was like, you know, sort of going to ramble on. But I mean, even thinking of, you know, the unhoused and the refugees, like, you know, we've gotten volunteer folks like Diana McNally, Britt Caron, who's been on the show, Lauren Lamb. Like, we've got like some incredible activists in the city.
You forgot about Kayla Hunter too.
Of course. Hunt.
Oh,
if she's listening, she'll be very disrespected.
I apologize.
You know, Robert, who you brought up.
The conveyor belt has started, my friend. So if I'm talking and then I ask you, what's the question?
No.
You don't know what I'm saying. Okay.
No,
so
I think I know exactly what you're referring to.
I'm not embarrassed. I'll say it. So when I get high, right, in my head, it's like a conveyor belt, right? So we're talking about something.
Ideas get lost.
And like the higher I get, right, the faster the conveyor belt goes. And I may forget about what you're talking about before you talk about it.
You know, if we ever
ask you, what's the question again?
If we ever do a live show, which I got to say would probably be so much fun. You know, we need to get like a big enough audience that we can.
You get enough bodies on the stage, mostly politicians, and we go down the row eviscerating every. No, I'm kidding. That would be fun.
I think it'd be fun if we got to like live show status. That would be so fun. What if we get big enough that we can travel and do live shows?
Oh, the dreams. We can then eviscerate coast to coast.
Oh, coast to coast evisceration. That'd be so much fun. So, I mean, that's, I think. So I know you're desperate to move on to federal politics.
How do you know?
Oh, I mean, you're chomping at the bit. You're like, you're so ready to go. And I'm happy for you to have something that you want to talk about with such, because I sort of get a gist of where you're going to go. I don't know. I'm thinking the power of the municipal politics. We are the municipals, but I think that's all I got for today. You know, boosting municipal candidates, but also boosting local activists.
Absolutely. Let me just get rid of this thing. Okay. Okay. So I've written a few notes and or bullet points for discussion. Here's I'm just gonna throw it out to you. Does the PharmaCare deal make the coalition between Trudeau and Mr. Singh a success? Oh, I think that was an email I got. I don't know. Somebody wants to know, and so I'm asking you.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought you were going to like rephrase like the question at the end there. Like, and I'm asking you, 5-minute pause. Oh, shit, we're on a podcast. No. It's a good thing. for this coalition. And here's, like, the sad thing is, when I say that, is it's a good thing because there's so few wins coming out of this coalition. And the fact that they have all this political capital, this political power, because again, as long as Trudeau and Singh stick together, God, I feel like when I think about the fact that they're set for an election, if they stick to the deal until the writ time proper, you know, that's plenty of time. And I'm just thinking how much time they've wasted doing nothing with their coalition, you know, and only with like the federal NDP threatening to cut the coalition do they start to make moves. So it's like, yeah, we've gotten an inadequate dental care. We're getting, when I say inadequate, it's better than nothing. Listen, nothing is not good. And some people might say that the tax dollars are wasted on these programs. Absolutely not. The behind the scenes, I think these programs can grow to be good. But the state that they start in and the lack of ambition to like, why is pharmacare only starting with, my understanding is, insulin and birth control, which are, don't get me wrong, important medications. And the federal government taking any of that off of anyone's hands is a great thing. But is that it?
I don't know whether to say this is a win or not. I don't think it makes the coalition a success based on the fact that what's the question?
Don't worry, everyone. The THC is kicked in. We are to the moon.
So no, the scandals and the controversies that the coalition has had to endure since it started is the reason that if one thing goes wrong, I don't consider it a success because of all the garbage they've had to deal with.
Here's a side question, man.
And I'm not, that's not me defending them.
No. In fact, I didn't see it as a defense. In fact, I'm about to defend only half of this coalition, but I think in a way that you will enjoy. Are these really coalition scandals? Are they really scandals on the NDP? Or are they only Trudeau liberal scandals?
Well, they're Trudeau liberal scandals. However,
oh God, are you going to say because he holds up this government that they're also NDP scandals?
They share in God, the riches.
Damn it!
There are receipts. There are enough receipts for everybody.
I really hope that translated into the microphone well, my screeching God damn it.
You know, federal politics is very, it's
a fucking circus.
I literally can't think of the words. But we didn't promise anything, but I do want to address the prediction I made on our last show, which if anyone's listened, I'm sure a bunch of you have.
Oh, I Matthew, said that Trudeau was
going to step down on the 29th, but I wasn't alone. I have an article. You'll have to just deal with the way I read, because apparently it's different from when I'm not high. Where did it go? Ah, here it is. It's in the Sun. Sorry, Philip. It says, time for PM to go. The 40th anniversary of Pierre Trudeau taking a walk in the snow had just passed, and many thought it would be Justin Trudeau's time to also kick rocks. And these are their words, not mine.
I got you. This is Brian Lilly, right?
Danette Wilford.
Ah, damn it. Okay. So I just think it's funnier if it's Brian Lilly.
Right?
just she probably this person probably went to them and say, "Hey, can I say this?" Justin Trudeau's time to kick rocks and call it a day as Prime Minister of Canada. As you know now, he didn't, but that didn't stop Warren Kinsella from writing about Trudeau's inevitable departure as Liberal leader, noting that the polls continue to show the Trudeau government is getting creamed by Pierre Poilievre and the Tories, and the fact that he simply doesn't look into the job is evidence enough that he is going. Otherwise, he will lead the Liberal Party of Canada to its worst defeat in history. But one thing Kinsella failed to note is pride. Trudeau is too proud to throw in the towel and just hand it over to Poilievre. But even Trudeau knows his time is up. Your thoughts?
Here's a kind of weird side thought. Okay, I feel like for Trudeau, and I'm mostly saying it from the perspective of the Sun, it's he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Okay, because here's my imagination. They view Justin Trudeau staying on as leader for the election as, you know, this selfish, ego-driven, you know, campaign. But hilarious. Keep in mind, Matthew, as you understand and know where I'm coming from, where I've truly accepted that Pierre Poilievre is almost definitely going to be the prime minister no later than October 2025. God damn it, but it is what it is. actually, I feel like that's sort of where I land on the it is what it is. But what I mean here is so him staying on is a selfish, ego-driven whatever it is. But you know that the second he steps down for another leader to take over, to still probably electoral defeat, I don't think there's any way to turn the ship around in the amount of time that they have towards an election.
Which is why they could have used this next year and whatever to break in the new leader.
And listen, I agree that I think they should have, before now, picked a new leader. I think it's too late. And I think any person they put up to be the leader, the party will be devastated regardless, but they will be viewed as a Kim Campbell-like figure in the, you know, in the history of Canadian politics, simply because they were there at the unfortunate timing of the party going down. And wouldn't that just be so... Listen, I'm not saying this for the likability of Chrystia Freeland. I'm more saying this on a feminist angle of imagine they throw Chrystia Freeland up as the leader of the federal Liberals just before this election.
Ugh.
Holy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I don't think there's any, in terms of the leader of the party, I don't think it matters. And I think this is just whinging for the sake of whinging from the Toronto Sun. Again, I did imagine it was Brian Lilly, so a lot of this this fight back is me imagining having this conversation with Brian Lilly.
So, keeping with federal politics, my boy Giorgio Mammoliti is running under the PPC umbrella in Simcoe Gray for MP.
Listen, and I made a note, Giorgio. This is incredible.
I made a note before you go on. I made a note that I did not follow through with, and it says, "Look for other candidates." I don't know if any other candidates have been named for Simcoe Gray under the other banners, but sorry, your thoughts on, you know, he was the city councilor for a ward. And then in 2018, when Premier Ford cut it from 44 to 25, he went head to head with Francis Nunziata and lost.
Did he? Oh, I didn't know that. That's fun information.
I believe that's who beat him. Because you know, everyone was going against each other. That's how Vincent Crisanti lost to Michael Ford. And I don't remember too many other battles.
Yeah, that was a wild year.
It was like, yeah, it was wild.
We'll stick with that. What's the question? Oh, we're talking. Okay. I remember where I was going. So then he moves up to, wow, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore when we're recording.
Future note. unless of course we have a dedicated 420 special episode. It's right? On a Saturday. Neither of us are working. Just a thought. Just throw that out there.
We should do that. maybe a live record. Well, we'll see.
I wonder if we could maybe find some. Well, I was gonna say some pot activists, but it's legal now. Pot activists don't exist anymore. Mark Emery got everything he wanted and decided to lose his mind, and he was running under the PPC. I think that was the 2021 federal election.
And don't forget, you know, even names such as Renata Ford has run under the PPC, banner.
What a fun party.
So after he was defeated in 2018, I guess he established roots in Wasega Beach, and he ran for mayor of Wasega Beach in the 2022 municipal election. He lost, and then during the Toronto by-election to replace John Tory, he ran, and he lost. And now, see...
This man loves to run, let's just be clear.
But I think this is why Josh Matlow didn't want to be painted with the same brush.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Giorgio Mammoliti just wants to be an elected representative of the government. In my opinion.
Yeah, it doesn't feel, and I agree with kind of your stance here where like the party could reflect his actual views, but just by the fact that he seems to be just jumping ship to wherever he can doesn't imply any sort of allegiance regionally, you know what I mean? And I would say that's as terrible as it sounds, that's less important for federal politicians. But municipally it does. Like,
can you do me a favor? Can you look up Simcoe Gray and tell me?
The funny thing was, I actually was going to do that while we were talking.
Does it cover Wasega Beach? So maybe he didn't have to go far.
Oh, maybe.
Let's all just wait for Philip. Do, 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 do.
No, everyone stop. This is terrible.
Oh, it's my
Simcoe
God.
County, right?
Simcoe Gray.
Oh, no, yeah, okay, so he's in the Wasega Beach area, Collingwood. Yeah, oh. This is, okay. So that makes sense. So yeah. He still has his established area. So, Giorgio, I take back my criticism. You've already done the work.
Yeah, but it's still jumping from job to job to job.
Listen, the criticism is still there, but at least we know he has spent time in both Toronto and Wasega Beach. So, you know what? I'll give it to him. He's put in the time. He's put in the time politically all the way through. You know, he started as an NDP MPP, which fucking blows me away. I can't believe that. An NDP MPP when they were the governing party in Ontario. That's insane. Giorgio is just like, oh, fuck. We need to have that guy back. What a fucking guy.
Oh my God, it's so great. So, I don't know if this is probably a longer conversation for us, but maybe something, I mean, we could delve into it better if I wasn't high. but I'd like to discuss, even briefly, you know, three things that you would like to see change or get better under either, because, I mean, we both agree liberals are not coming back. So the three things that you would like to see change or get better under a conservative government led by Pierre Poilievre or an NDP government led by Jagmeet Singh.
Well, let's get the sad reality out of the way. Jagmeet Singh is not going to become the prime minister. And I hate to say that. I don't know what it'll take. Like, the country is honestly, this happens every time we get sick of the governing party. You know, the Liberals have been here 10 years. God, you really do just lose steam after you've been in power for a certain amount of time. That's the thing. If there's even some scenario where the liberals could, in fact, win the next election and keep going, they're already just dragging their like lifeless political bodies across the floor. And it's just like, it just seems like they've given up. So, I mean, I actually, based on that, it doesn't seem like they would be able to put up a big enough fight to even make some weird comeback to win the election. It really does just seem like they've given up. The federal conservatives, again, my fundamental issue with the conservative ideology, it seems to me that they're presenting the idea that they'll cut income taxes and then people will come out being independently wealthy. And that's just insane. And I think I'm mostly coming from like a lower income perspective where it's like, I don't know, my taxes are overall like $100 on my paycheck or something. Getting that extra $100 is not going to be like life-changing money. But at the same time, if the government isn't providing services that you think are of value, of course you're going to be mad that taxes are going to a system that you see as inefficient. I'm going, I'm playing both sides here so that I always come out on
You're carrying the water.
top. It's I feel like it's a hard conversation, you know, and I remember seeing some, you know, a stray bullet point of someone saying this comment that was like, man, I'm so sick of getting taxed 50% of my income. It's like, and I see a comment like that, and I feel like there's three options for what they're saying. One, that they're incredibly ignorant and they don't know how the tax system works. Two, that they're including things like taxes on purchases and stuff like that. I don't know if they're including that, but if they're talking about income tax, if they're getting taxed at 50%, you gotta be making some insane amount of money. So I see somebody saying that, and you know, as a bit of like a, oh, woe is me, I'm suffering under this liberal government, and they're saying they're getting taxed 50%. I'm thinking, how, what, are you making $500,000? Are you getting taxed at 50%? $250,000 is enough to live off of? You insane freak. I don't think you get taxed 50% if you make $500,000, but like I don't. I should probably look into the tax rates, but if you're making so much money that you're taxed losing so much money, I don't think you've got financial things to worry about in this country, frankly. That's just my perspective. That's my kind of long-winded way of saying that I don't think a Pierre Poilievre government would improve anything. But because my understanding is that that's his plan for relief. It's just to cut taxes, and that's not going to
Such as
provide
the,
relief.
well, I mean, you and I disagree on this.
But
I would vote for a complete cut, permanent, of the
you can
carbon
say it.
tax.
Yeah, you can listen. Use the slogan. You can do
What's that? What's that? I don't know what the slogan, I swear.
it. You know the THC, it's fine. I'm referring to the axe, the tax.
Oh, my brain,
Tax attacks,
the
bring it home, common sense, blah, blah, blah.
The conveyor belt's moving way too fast.
I love it. I'm so excited for you right now. Matthew, it's Sunday night. You have to enjoy yourself. So I'm enjoying the conveyor belt.
Got to be honest. So I was at a work function last night, and we were all sitting around the table at like some restaurant or whatever. And I honestly, I don't think I have laughed like that in years. Years, just me and the guys, just a bunch of guys. It was like a guys' night. No offense to women, you know.
Matthew, you are on
Feel like
a
I have to.
trend.
I feel
You
like I
are
have to
kicking
preface
them
this.
down. You are, listen, all my feminist friends, we gotta listen, we gotta route together. We gotta kick the shit out of Matthew. Let's go. He won't stop talking shit about you guys. I'm trying to freak you out while you're still on the THD. Like,
No.
oh my God, is Philip actually going to organize? No, you know, I'm not going to organize a feminist cabal to kick your ass.
No, we're when you were talking about what the NDP would do, I don't know. I lost you in there.
Didn't I just say what they would do is not win?
Yeah, but then you started talking about taking away the income tax, and I completely forgot what we were talking about.
Oh. Again, once again, I'm excited by the conveyor belt.
Let's not
We're not a visual podcast, but if you could all watch me do, I'm sitting on my hands delighted because Matthew is just absolutely ripped.
I don't think I explained it properly. So like if I asked you a question, right, and you know you have long-winded answers, right? Which is cool. I'm not picking
You
on
know,
you.
I'd
But because it's long-winded
podcast was 15 minutes
and if you're giving a long answer, by the time you're done, I don't remember what the question is.
You know what? You know what? Matthew, I'm gonna give you here's an interesting little tidbit of my life. I've never been diagnosed as such. But I have this sneaking suspicion that I've either got ADHD or some form of autism. And I'll be in the middle of a statement and I could completely forget where I was going. And so I hear you. Listen, you're listening to me doing my long things. I am very fortunate to be catching myself because I'm very, and that's not even talking like stoned to me. That's just like regular me at work.
Maybe we should try you stoned on the show.
I mean, again, 420, we have a great opportunity to figure something out because that's, again, that's a Saturday.
Could do something. So there's a news article that I have a screenshot of. I read it. It's from the Star. So there you go. I'm not just the Toronto Sun. Anyway. It was about neighborhood food court closures. Like, well, one example they gave was McDonald's. And what we're, of course, talking about is, you know, the seniors, they flock to these food courts and it really helps. It's their social time. And it's been like that since I was a kid. I remember specifically, you know, Saturdays and Sundays when I used to work at Shoppers Drug Mart. And in this small little snack bar food court thing, you would always see seniors there every day. Doesn't matter, especially like in the morning. And so I'll go to the screenshot if I can find it. Let's see here. Here we go. Here we go. I've got it. And they center it around, I believe it's Cedarbrae Mall, is undergoing an extensive transformation this year with additional retailers and services, including a Fit for Less, a Taekwondo studio, a health food store entering the mix. The Tim Hortons remains open in the food court, so morning coffee chats will likely continue. At Eglinton Square, Tim Hortons now has a monopoly on the coffee crowd when it used to be 50-50 split. But I think there's a McDonald's at Cedarbrae Mall that shut down.
That sounds right, yeah.
He goes on to say the glow of
Actually,
the.
I think that was the picture I think I saw in the Cedarbrae Mall McDonald's.
Yeah, so he goes on to say, by the way, this article is written by Mr. Karen Liu, Karonliu, and he's a Toronto-based food reporter for the Star. So we're using his article, and he writes, "The glow of the Golden Arches will soon be turned off, but I hope the warmth from the people at the tables will remain." In 1997, during the height of the Beanie Babies frenzy, when those black-eyed fabric bags of plastic pellets were worth their weight in gold, a cashier at the McDonald's would set aside one of the toys I coveted because she remembered my face after so many visits. Yes, it's a fast food chain, but that doesn't mean customers can't form memorable connections to it or its employees. Holy fuck, I'm really bad at this.
I was just going to say straight facts before you went off. Fuck,
I'm just going to keep. Anyway, so I thought we could talk about, I don't know if you've ever, if you have a local food court that you go to, that you notice. So where I am, I've heard, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Albion Mall, the Albion Center. So that's our closest mall. And the McDonald's is actually gone from there. And it's one of those old time malls that I grew up with. I've seen seniors there every day, Monday to Sunday. It don't matter. And it's their spot. And, you know, there's always been rumors that Albion Mall is going to shut down or whatever. So I see stores coming in and out of there all the time. But McDonald's, that could potentially shut them all down. I remember Rexdale Plaza used to have Eaton Center. And once we lost Eaton Center, we lost our ass. Then everything left. The beer store left. LCBO left. Tip Top Taylor left. Everything left. Byway left. And eventually, there's no more Rexdale Mall, and now there's a Walmart there. I'm just going to keep rambling on until you take it.
No, so
go ahead.
It's what you're talking about is sort of this conversation that is smarter and above me, but of this concept of the third place, which do you know the concept of like third places?
No.
It's essentially, it's, you know, you got home and you got work. And I think work is also like, you know, school if you're younger. And the idea of a third place is simply a place that you can go, or a place where people end up going that's not home or work. And that's where most people hang out. So that could be church, that could be the mall. And just even by saying those things, do you get the sense that people aren't just kind of like hanging out as much anymore?
I think the younger crowd, maybe not because of technology, but definitely the older crowd.
Technology could be a part of it, but I don't think there's any options anymore for cheap hanging out. Someone had pointed out, I can't remember who, so if you hear me saying this, these are not my original thoughts. I didn't steal them. But someone had given like a great example of, you know, Tuesday $5 movie tickets, KFC Toonie Tuesdays. It's just like, it's a cheap night out for, you know, teenagers. And that stuff doesn't really exist anymore. Yeah, like Tuesdays, there's still cheaper movie tickets, but they're not $5. And there's no like cheap menus at restaurants anymore. So like everything, anytime you leave the house, everything just, it costs more just to exist. So we're losing out on these third spaces. And that's really what, there's actually quite a few facets to the conversation, but I do think the biggest factor is a discussion about our loss of these more casual hangouts.
Wow. I don't think I can top that. So here's what I'll say. We're going to take our break a minute early. We're going to come back, and the main event is going to be about Brian Mulrooney, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right. So we'll see you guys on the other side. And we're back, and we chose to leave this for the main event tonight, just talking and I guess maybe highlighting a few things and just, you know, talking about Brian Mulrooney, who tragically died. But apparently he was surrounded by his family. He died Friday. This past Friday, 2 days ago, February 29th, at the age of 84 years old. Now, I just did a quick Google search, Philip, and because Brian Mulrooney was before my time. And so I'm looking at Wikipedia. And of course, we all know Wikipedia is wrong sometimes, but that's why I'm citing my source.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
It means that you can edit anything you want on Wikipedia. Anyway.
Can't wait until we're big enough to get our own Wikipedia pages.
I can't either. So he became the 18th Prime Minister of Canada, and he was in office from September 17th, 1984 to June 25th, 1993. He was preceded by John Turner, and he was succeeded by Kim Campbell. You brought her up earlier. Let's see here. Mulroney's tenure as Prime Minister was I guess we should say he was a conservative Prime Minister. Anyway, his tenure as Prime Minister was marked by the introduction of major economic reforms such as the Canada-United States Free Trade Agreement, the Goods and Service Tax, GST, that was created to replace the Manufacturer Sales Tax, and the privatization of 23 of 61 Crown corporations, including Air Canada and Petro Canada. Ah, so he was responsible for the GST.
I believe that was pretty controversial at the time.
Mulroney sought Quebec's endorsement in the 1982 constitutional amendments by first introducing the Meech Lake Accord and then the Charlottetown Accord. Both proposed recognizing Quebec as a distinct society, extending provincial powers, and extensively changing the constitution. Both of the accords failed to be ratified, and the Meech Lake Accord's demise revived Quebec separatism, leading to the rise of the Bloc Québécois. I don't know why I said it like that.
You're excited.
Anyway, this doesn't have to be long, but is there anything that you've been able to read up on or that you wanted to say the passing of, whether you liked him or not, he was one of the titans of Canadian political history.
Okay, I really should have done this while you were speaking, but I need to find out who was prime minister when they decided that acid rain was a big enough deal to fix. If it was Brian Mulroney or Jean Chrétien, because you know we'll see some of these dumbass comments on the internet where it's people who kind of deny that climate change is a thing. And they'll say something along the lines of, oh, what happened to acid rain? What happened to the hole in the ozone layer? It's the stupidest thing to hear, because the answer to that very dumb question is we fixed it. And I'm under the impression that it was Brian Mulroney who was in charge during the acid rain fiasco. But
I just found something while you're doing that. I wanted to highlight this. You know, in 1985, it says Mulroney's government introduced a four-year plan. The four-year plan to restructure family benefits. Starting in 1986, family allowances were partially indexed to the cost of living. For 3 years, from 1986 to 1988, the refundable child tax credits were increased to $549 per year. Starting in 1989, the tax credits were partially indexed in the same manner as family allowances. That same year, as part of the government's program to target social benefits to low or middle income Canadians, universal family allowances ended, as high income parents were required to repay all of their benefits at tax filing time. The system maintained and increased a tax deduction for childcare expenses, benefiting high-income families the most. In 1992, the government replaced family allowances with a new child tax benefit that included the family allowance, the refundable child tax credit, and a non-refundable child tax credit. The new benefit paid a maximum of $85 per month per child, up to the age of 18, and was tax-free. It was income tested on the net family income reported in the proceedings income tax returns. So he created the family allowance, the child tax credit, as we know it today.
I need to know how it was before him, but I assume it was worse. So hooray, Brian Mulroney. Good shit. That is a good, listen, I say it jokingly, but that is a good thing. So,
to your point, not to the one you made, but I found another thing. One of Mulroney's priorities was to lower the deficit, which under Pierre Trudeau had increased from $667 million in the 1968 budget to $37.2 billion in the 1984 budget. Wow. So Justin Trudeau gets it honestly.
You know what? It looks like Mulroney was responsible. Not exclusively Mulroney. This is a time where these huge environmental issues takes, you know, global cooperation, which does in fact seem as if it's something that is beyond us right now. Honest to God, it really does. I was reading this article that talked about the story of fixing acid rain. And at the end of it, I think it said something along the lines of how, you know, people move beyond their partisanship to work together to solve this. And all I thought was, well, we're fucking boned. we're not doing that shit no more. Yeah. So, like, just on the Brian Mulroney Wikipedia page, it looks as if that was their environmental policy that was working towards tackling acid rain and the hole in the ozone layer. So you know what? Conservatives sometimes believe in climate change and they do the right thing. And it happened. And it was Brian Mulroney, evidently.
So what I'm hearing is if you were you back then, maybe you would have voted for Brian Mulroney.
Maybe. Maybe my image on conservatism would be different than what it is now. I don't know. It's hard to know. Like, you know, a lot of people on social media have been sort of talking about the way politics used to be, where it was more respectful between the sides. I don't know how true that is, but you get the sense that something has been lost recently. One of my favorite, this isn't about Brian Mulroney, but I hope you can get the connecting thought tissue here. One of my favorite clips ever, that happened in Parliament. Okay. It's Jack Layton. He's the opposition. He's leader of Her Majesty's loyal opposition at that time. Again, at that time, it would have been Her Majesty. But anyways, And he's making this the point about, you know, this government, this federal government, should do something that the previous governments weren't able to do, and to cut subsidies. God, I love this so much. He said to big oil and big ass. And it was so like he immediately, obviously, he went like, oh, a gas. And here's the biggest shout out I can give to Stephen Harper. His response to that was, we'll be sure to get to the bottom of it. Like, fucking brilliant. You know, it's charming. It's charming partisanship where it's not everything is the end of the world. You know what I mean?
Again, bringing it back to Brian Mulroney, you know, sad that, I guess he's gone, and he did a great job as prime minister. From what I've read, and I've only briefly perused it, and I'm high, so you know. But I thought he did a good job. I don't remember him; he was before my time, so maybe I'm wrong.
He's also, you know what? He's weirdly. I'm not saying this to be like, Matthew, you can't like him now. He is weirdly complimentary of Justin Trudeau. But I mean in the sense of, as part of the image of, I want to say, nicer politics, I know there have been people who've been talking about, I don't know the details of, something to do with Oka? I don't know what that is. Someone smarter than me, tell me what it is, because I understand that it was a terrible thing. I'm saying I don't know what it was because I'm stupid. And
I have no idea what the fuck you're saying.
Yeah, I really should have looked it up before starting this bit. But, again, the bad stuff doesn't take away from the politics is so nice and friendly. But there is a certain aspect that feels lost when every single political fight feels like it's life and death.
Absolutely. And with that, before I let you go, I have a funny story I wanted to tell, and I thought you'd get a kick out of it. So as everyone knows, I've said it before, I deliver for a living. So I'm done my day, right? And I happen to be at Church and Bloor. So I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I don't like waiting. You probably don't understand it, but if you drive down University, it turns into York, and there's a massive line of cars to try to get on the Gardner West to get the hell out of the city. It's very inconvenient. It's very slow. I don't like to do it. So I like to drive over to the Jameson Bridge, if you've heard me talk about it before. The Jameson Bridge closes at 1:58 in the afternoon. So I'm at Church in Bloor. So what I usually do is I go down Church to Wellesley. I cut straight across Wellesley right behind Queen's Park and go out. And then I turn on College and I spit down a side street. And I end up basically taking Beverly straight to Queen. And then Richmond Street takes me all the way to Bathurst, down to King. And then, boom, I get in the Jameson Bridge at there by King and Dufferin. It is a long way to drive, but it's the way I prefer because I'm not waiting in that lineup. If I'm always moving, I feel better. Anyway, I say all that to say I'm driving down Church Street and there's a Tesla in front of me. And this Tesla stays with me from Church and Bloor all the way to we turn the same way. Off behind Queen's Park to go down University.
Matthew,
sorry,
you know I don't advocate vehicular violence. You can't ram Tesla.
How did you know I was going? No. So once I think she went straight on, or he or she, I didn't get a good look, went straight on University, whereas I turned on to College. That's where we lost each other. But I swear to God, until then, this is what happened. I don't know how many intersections there are, but in every time there was a street light, like a light, like red, yellow, green, this person would stop their car, whether it was red, yellow, or green, stop and look and see if there's any cars coming, and then drive, even if it was green. By the time we reached over by Queen's Park, I am not honking my horn. I'm laying on that shit and I'm not moving. And I got my windows rolled up and I am cussing this woman out or guy, or I didn't honestly get a good look. It could have been either. There was long hair. That's all I know.
No, I like this story.
I was cussing this person out so badly. I'm glad my windows were up, because if they were down, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah. I've never had an issue with a Tesla before. In all the car stories I've ever heard, you've heard me ram or rail on every other type of car. But I said, no, I've never had an issue with a Tesla. I've never been cut off, nothing like that. Until this person, I don't know. And you know what? I told someone else what happened and they're like, well, that person must have been in an accident. So now they're afraid. Now they look. But what they're actually doing, Philip, It's illegal to stop a full stop on a green light. That's illegal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you why it's illegal, but I know it is.
Well, I mean, I can make sense of that. If you stop on a full green, you're impeding traffic.
Yes.
So I mean that's easy. That's easy even for this anti-car brand loser to suss out.
So I thought I would tell you that story. And
Once again, Matthew, you can't black out the minute you see a Tesla. You gotta stay calm. You gotta keep that rage in check.
Anything for your boy Elon?
Oh no, you're not.
He's not your boy.
He is. God damn, no, he is not my boy. He's so far. Oh my god. No, Elon Musk is not my boy.
And I think we'll end it there. So, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week with next time with brand new content. And so for Phil and me, thank you.
And welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't fish.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.